China is coming from the East, and it is going to bite. It is going to bite all of us. You see their human rights records. They are killing people in Uyghur territories.
Uyghurs caught in the middle of economic expansion. It's Thursday, March 25th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online. We're at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, India's lockdown anniversary. Climate change affecting water. A change of political tone. Tiny homeless homes. A virtual music competition. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Turkey is deepening its economic ties with China, despite a growing international outcry over Beijing's treatment of its Uyghur Muslim minority. Analysts say the subject of the Uyghurs is not likely to come up in conversations as China's foreign minister visits Turkey. Dorian Jones reports for VOA from Istanbul.
This month saw China's Xiaomi open a mobile telephone factory in Istanbul. Turkey's technology minister, Mustafa Varank, was on hand to celebrate the latest Chinese investment. The Xiaomi factory is just the latest in a fast-developing Turkish-Chinese partnership.
Certainly, economic aspect, bilateral trade especially, that saw an exponential rise since 2000 or so in the last 20 years. And in the final 4 or 5 years, I would say it got much closer, not only in the economic sense, but in the political ideological sense as well.
China recently bought out an Italian company's stake in Istanbul's landmark new third bridge. China is now among Turkey's biggest investors. Traditional European investors are withdrawing as their governments punish Ankara over human rights. Measures, as some argue, are pushing Turkey away from the West.
This hostile actions against Turkey will immediately and will eventually not force, but let's say, lineate Turkey with the Eurasian and Asian forces, Asian powers like Russia and China. Right now, the Asian century started.
Beijing is also increasingly providing Ankara financial support in its efforts to prop up the plummeting Turkish currency. China is also a leading supplier of COVID vaccines to Turkey. Turkey's deepening ties with China have seen Ankara remain largely silent over Beijing's crackdown on its predominantly Muslim Uyghur minority. But within government circles, there is unease over China's growing influence.
China is coming from the East, and it is going to bite. It is going to bite all of us. You see their human rights records. They are killing people in Uyghur territories.
Turkey is one of the main hosts of Uyghur refugees, including many dissidents. China is pressing Turkey to ratify an extradition agreement, opening the door to returning Uyghurs. Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Li is expected to press the issue during his Ankara visit.
There is still a strong pro-Uyghur lobby domestically, and that lobby is the voter base of the current governments. So the governments oscillates between pleasing China and pleasing its domestic voter base. Basically. This unpredictability, as perceived by China, prevents it from engaging fully with Turkey.
Ahead of Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Li's visit, reports say Beijing has presented Ankara with a list of Uyghur dissidents it wants extradited. With the Turkish currency under increasing pressure, support from China could be vital, forcing Ankara into a difficult choice. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
You'll find more on this and all of our other stories by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. You'll also find our stories posted on Facebook at VOA Asia, and you can stop by the voanews.com website. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. Bodies recovered from site of massive fire at Rohingya refugee camp in Bangladesh. Indian Prime Minister sends message of goodwill to Pakistani counterpart. Top UN rights body approves greater scrutiny of Sri Lanka. U.S. adding air power to naval operations in disputed South China Sea. Australian flood drives spiders into homes and backyards. Expanded coverage of all these stories and so much more can be found on Facebook at VOA Asia and our website, voanews.com. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Let's continue with VOA Asia. 1 year ago, India imposed one of the world's strictest lockdowns, resulting in an exodus of millions of domestic migrant workers from its crowded cities. In recent months, many have returned. Some are finding jobs in an economy that is slowly recovering from its worst fall in decades. But others are struggling. Anjana Pasricha has a report from New Delhi.
Migrant workers were among millions who trekked hundreds of kilometers to their village homes after Indian cities abruptly shuttered a year ago to stave off the COVID-19 pandemic. Others scrambled to get on to buses. The mass exodus of migrants stranded without jobs and money sparked a humanitarian crisis. Life in villages was not easy either.
I used to break stones from a small hill close by to sell to people building homes. That's how I managed to get by.
I tried to find something that would yield an income and sustain the family, but I could do nothing due to the lockdown.
India's months-long shutdown led to mass unemployment in a country where rural migrants sustain the big city economy, working as drivers, construction labor, rickshaw pullers, or at street stalls, among other things. This vast, unorganized sector accounts for more than 90% of the country's livelihoods.
That's why it's only in India, out of the major economies, that you saw mass migration from urban to rural areas. You didn't see this mass migration taking place in the US or in UK or in China, etc., because they don't have such a large unorganized sector. And the unorganized sector doesn't have the kind of poverty that it is there in India. That's why India was particularly hard hit.
India's worst economic crisis brought more hardship than war, says Kumar.
What happens in war is that everybody is busy fighting the war, producing for the war, etc. But here, because people are not working, so unemployment is there. And that's why the economy dropped very sharply.
As cities reopen, many people have returned to search for livelihoods. But the pandemic has changed cities. Kamal Singh sold his cab. The new norm of working from home meant he got very few customers.
I used to roam around 100 to 150 kilometers a day, but get few rides, and the money I earned barely covered my expenses on the cab.
Some have been luckier. Jobs are returning as the economy recovers. Yadav was employed 2 months ago at a food counter.
Now everything is good. I have even returned the loans I took.
But the pandemic's scars run deep.
I'm always fearful that suppose another such problem comes, how will I manage, especially if my family increases? This really troubles me.
That question has acquired new urgency as some parts of India grapple with the second wave. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
Happening now in Asia, Myanmar's junta freed hundreds of demonstrators arrested during its brutal crackdown on protests, while many businesses in Yangon remained closed and streets were deserted after anti-coup activists called for a silent strike. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today as we continue with VOA Asia. The World Meteorological Organization is warning climate change is intensifying water-related disasters, threatening the lives and livelihoods of billions of people around the world. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva as World Water Day was observed this week.
Climate-related hazards include increased flooding and longer-lasting droughts. Climate change also is altering rainfall patterns, affecting water availability and worsening the damage floods and drought cause worldwide. The World Meteorological Organization says increased flooding threatens to destroy water points and sanitation facilities and contaminate water sources. As a consequence, WMO spokeswoman Claire Nullis says billions of people have limited or no access to clean water and sanitation.
So 39% of the global population doesn't have access to safe drinking water. We expect this problem to be exacerbated because of socioeconomic changes, of population growth, and obviously changes in sources of water, such as glaciers.
The WMO calls glaciers the water towers of the world. It warns the melting of ice cover and glaciers is leading to more hazards and threatening the long-term water security of hundreds of millions of people. Nullis says one of the most dramatic examples of how this is playing out can be seen in Tajikistan, a country that had more than 14,500 glaciers in the 20th century.
Today, more than 1,000 of these have completely melted, and the total volume of glacier mass has decreased by one-third. This, in the short term, leads to more hazards like avalanches, mud flows, flooding, what we call glacial outbursts.
Glaciers are a key source of water. In the long term, Nullis warns glacier melt will lead to increased water stress for many millions of people. She says the same phenomenon is being repeated throughout the world. The WMO says more than half of countries worldwide have no quality management systems for water. The agency is calling for more concerted action on safeguarding the world's diminishing water sources and on mitigating climate change. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un broke ground for 10,000 new apartments in the capital city of Pyongyang. According to state media, despite economic crises that have left other signature construction projects stalled. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, U.S. President Joe Biden is touring the country to encourage support for his recently passed $1.9 trillion COVID relief package as he seeks to help Americans mourn over coronavirus deaths while offering hope with his ambitious vaccine drive. Patsy Whitaker-Swara looks at how Biden's crisis communication style compares to his predecessor.
As the nation struggles to return to normalcy, President Joe Biden is on a multi-city tour promoting the $1.9 trillion relief package he signed with stimulus checks already delivered to some Americans. Focused on the coronavirus during his first 2 months in office, Biden has sought to return the presidency to its more traditional role after four unorthodox and often tumultuous years under Donald Trump.
We need to remember the government isn't some foreign force in a distant capital. No, it's us, all of us, we the people.
Marking a year of the pandemic last week, Biden offered empathy as Americans mourn the loss of 530,000 lives and hope as his administration closes in on 100 million vaccine shots in just 60 days.
And the people who knocked these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
Previous presidents have done the same. George W. Bush's speech after the 9/11 terrorist attacks and Barack Obama's tearful address after a school massacre both captured the emotions of the country.
These kinds of rituals are meant to do is give a sense of meaning to people about why these things happened, what we make of them as a country and how we might move forward together.
65% of Americans approve of Biden's handling of the pandemic, in part because, unlike his predecessor, he does not downplay the crisis.
The virus will not have a chance against us. No nation is more prepared or more resilient than the United States.
There was so much effort on trying to steer blame away from what was happening with COVID that any acknowledgement of loss might implicate him in some ways in what was happening. So Biden is going in completely the other direction, trying to marshal these federal resources, but also use this pastoral tone in order to soothe the nation.
But Biden faces steep challenges. No congressional Republican supported his stimulus package.
This is a classic example of big government Democratic overreach in the name of COVID relief.
While Biden says he wants to bring the country together, only 48% of Americans believe that he can. Despite the president's calls for unity, bipartisanship is likely to remain elusive.
I think he genuinely wants to try to find it. I think Biden believes that there are a number of Republican senators who are tired of the way things have gone. But so far, we don't have any evidence that that translates into a sincere willingness to compromise.
Various polls show most Republican voters continue to believe in the false narrative that the election was stolen, another obstacle for the nation to overcome. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, the second batch of Sinovac vaccine donated by China arrived in the Philippines amid the rapid surge of COVID-19 infections in the Southeast Asian country. Philippine officials welcomed the arrival of the Chinese vaccine and expressed appreciation for China's donation. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, people in many U.S. cities are struggling with homelessness caused by unemployment and high housing prices, or even issues such as mental illness and substance abuse. As Mike O'Sullivan reports, officials in California say temporary tiny homes are a part of the solution.
More than 66,000 people were homeless in Los Angeles County in 2020. Nearly 23,000 were placed in housing the previous year, but tens of thousands are living on the streets. A temporary solution, hundreds of small prefabricated homes being built at seven sites by the Los Angeles Conservation Corps, a youth service organization. One opened in February, providing a private living space for this woman and dozens of others.
My money ran out where I was on the streets and I was trying to rent a motel. That ran out. So then I was on the streets in a living behind the freeway.
She wore multiple layers of clothing to discourage attackers after a man tried unsuccessfully to rape her. Now her tiny home has heating and air conditioning and a door that can be locked, providing safety. There are 39 homes in this community, each 6 square meters, with separate communal laundry, shower, and eating facilities. Eventually, 75 people will live here. It is run by a charity, Hope of the Valley.
You get 3 meals a day delivered on site. This is our dining area, or people can choose to take it back to their cabin.
City officials bought these homes from a company in Washington State called Pallet.
So this is our latest LA site, the Alexandria Project. As you can see, we have units going up here. So we have some that are partially completed and some that are all put together.
This site will have 103 homes. Each, as outfitted, costs about $11,000. Other costs for these communities, including paving, power, water, and sewage lines, range from several hundred thousand to several million dollars. Residents do not need to be free of drugs to live here, but must leave illegal drugs and alcohol outside in a personal locker. It's a solution that offers safety and privacy and is endorsed by many local officials, including the former mayor of Riverside, California, who spent 2 weeks living in a shelter to raise awareness of homelessness. Residents get a place to live and targeted social services.
For example, maybe for you it is mental health, or maybe it's an addiction, or maybe there's some trauma, and we're going to spend your entire stay here, be it 90 days or 120 days, really focused on addressing that one core issue.
then getting help to move into permanent housing, a process that's not easy, given limited subsidized housing and financial and emotional challenges.
How are you going to supposed to build your life, you know? How are you supposed to get back on your feet? It's hard. It's really hard.
This is one of many approaches to dealing with homelessness.
It's not the only model, but it is a good alternative for a segment of our homeless population.
Helping make a dent in a massive social problem. Michael Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Virtual music competition with real prizes. This is the concept of a new music platform called Juki. Both amateur and professional songwriters and musicians from around the world are invited to participate for free. Maria Pruz has the story.
A global song contest on your mobile device. That's what a new platform called Juki is offering musicians who get a chance to win fans around the world and cash prizes of up to $10,000. Hollywood producer and sound engineer Brian Malouf says the winner also gets another big prize.
And the winner, the first place winner, wins a recording session at an iconic recording studio, Capitol, here in L.A., and we decide what song we're going to record. Now, what would typically also happen during that week is I would set up meetings for them with publishers, other A&R people, managers, social media maven, press relations executive.
The startup idea was born after the pandemic forced the closure of music venues and cancellation of contests, says Juki co-founder Andrew Dachowski.
The idea of a global online song contest came when we first heard that Eurovision 2020 would be canceled for the first time in the last 64 years. And immediately, we came up with the idea of a global song contest, which is not dependent on quarantine or states closing borders.
This is how Juki works. Musicians from around the world upload their songs to the app and invite fans to support them. The song or artist with the most votes wins a weekly contest. Every 3 months, there is a grand finale, where fans and a special jury of international music experts select a winner. Previous winners hail from the US, Peru, and a band from Kazakhstan. The app also takes an egalitarian approach and considers all songs, even ones recorded on smartphones.
We have poor quality songs from different countries from artists who probably couldn't go to a studio and pay for a quality demo. It doesn't matter at all. The quality of the recording might be poor, but the idea behind the composition might be great. So we're judging by the quality of the idea.
For now, because of the lockdown, winners can't make it to California. But the app creators say they will have plenty planned for them in L.A. as soon as it's safe to travel.
I'd say that this is a place to be because good things can happen to you. And if you're not in it, if you're not in the place where something good could happen to you, chances are you could miss out on something. And because it's such a competitive environment.
While the app certainly offers very promising prizes for the musicians, it also helps connect performers from around the world in one digital place, something that in today's COVID reality is extremely precious. Maria Pruz for VOA News, Washington.
We're glad to have had you with us today on VOA Asia. We invite you back at this same time tomorrow. In the meantime, you can follow us online. You'll find us under our name, VOA Asia, on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and of course our website, voanews.com. We thank those who help bring the program to you every day, our managing editor, Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.